control of your own mind. It's just not. It's a very strange reality when you can't trust yourself. There's no foundation for anything. The faith I might have had in normal things like gravity or logic or love is gone because my mind might not be reading them correctly. You can't possibly know what it means to doubt everything. To walk into a room full of people and pretend that it's empty because you're not actually sure if it is or not. To never feel completely alone, even when you are. I bet you can walk into a Starbucks and order a drink without wondering if the music playing on the speakers is playing for everyone or just in your head. But I guess I should just be proud of myself because I don't avoid going places or doing things simply because I'm not sure if what's going on is real. If it's real, then I'm just living my life and responding to the world the only way I can. If none of this is real, then I'm still just living my life. And anyway, it's real to me. St. Agatha's Church is open to the public during school hours, which means anyone can be there. The prayer room off to the right of the altar and the bathroom in the main hall are pretty much fair game for the homeless. The stalls in the bathroom are covered in graffiti that is cleaned up at the end of every month by kids serving detention. The last time I used it, there were only two things written on the wall. One was written in all caps in a delicate scrawl. It read, "Jesus loves you." The other, just below it, read, "Don't be a homo." I can't really tell if that was in response to "Jesus loves you." I think it must be. Weird notes to leave on a bathroom wall. Weird notes to leave anywhere, really. Chapter 12.
Dosage 1.5 milligrams, same dosage. Despite numerous attempts to engage Adam in conversation, he has remained silent during every session. We'll continue to monitor body language for signs of receptivity to treatment. We'll advise increase in dosage.
October 31, 2012. It's Halloween, which basically means nothing if you go to St. Agatha's because no one in high school wears costumes. Maya told me that sometimes the little kids in the lower grades dress up, but they can only come as animals, plants, or their favorite saint. So, worst Halloween themes ever, I think. She still remembers the one little girl who dressed up as a giant red rose one year and was so embarrassed when she got to school that she called her mom from the nurse's office to come pick her up because she was the only one in costume. I like the way she tells stories without adding any details that aren't strictly necessary. She gets to the point. But I'm almost positive she was the little girl in that story, and she didn't want to relive the embarrassment of the giant plastic flower headdress. Telling it like it happened to someone else might have made it less traumatizing for her. I get that. I like to pretend weird shit happens to other people, too. Unfortunately, that's not always possible. I've started paying more attention to the side effects of other drugs. There's no question that we are overly medicated as a country. Our obsession with erections alone is just insane. You can barely watch cartoons anymore without bearing witness to some guy's embarrassing lack of wood. And yes, I can almost hear your judgment.
But Adam, without your current medication, wouldn't you be listening to the voices in your head and trying to follow the white rabbit to Wonderland?
Touché, jackass. Yes, you're right. Some people do need medication to help them get through some really serious shit, and I, for one, would not begrudge any man the opportunity to sport a raging boner whenever he feels like it. When Paul and I were watching TV, actually, while I was watching TV and Paul was trying to think of something to say to me, I counted 4 commercials for sexual enhancement drugs, 1 for depression and 1 for restless leg syndrome. The side effects of all these drugs could be a number of things like heart attack, anxiety, trouble urinating, an erection lasting longer than 4 hours, muscle tension, death, and my favorite, anal leakage. Death, I understand. There are plenty of people willing to die to achieve ridiculous results. But I really don't think any drug could justify the possibility of anal leakage. If anything ever drips out of my ass as a result of the treatment I'm receiving, the cure is clearly not worth it. Please kill me. I've been keeping a list of things that bother me. I'm not sure what prompted this, except that I wanted it noted somewhere. 1. When people borrow my books and dog-ear pages. 2. The sound of a spoon scraping the bottom of a plastic yogurt cup. 3. Chewing with your mouth open. Gum, food, anything. This is completely unacceptable. Note, Ian does this, and it is disgusting. 4. Arguing with stupid people, knowing that you're right, but then they say something condescending that basically means, okay, I'm going to go because you don't seem to understand what I'm saying. When really you do understand. You just know that they're wrong. Like when someone says the world is flat, and you argue with them because obviously it is not, so eventually they just smile and say something like, oh well, in some places that may be true. You don't need to concede their point. There is no point. You should be allowed to slap them because clearly they are too stupid to live. 5. The word rural. I will never use it. Ever. I hate the way it sounds. 6. When people ask me how I feel today. Chapter 13.
Dosage 2 milligrams. Increased dosage approved.
November 7, 2012. I don't even want to tell you about this, but I will because I have no one else to tell, and if I keep going over it in my own head, I'm going to go crazy. Ha. Maya was having a really bad day, but because she's basically a robot, she didn't want to tell me what was wrong. I don't mean robot as in she doesn't have any connection to people or that she doesn't care about anyone, because she does. She definitely does. I just mean that she processes information exactly as it hits her, as logically as possible. She doesn't make a fuss about it, she just responds to it. And she doesn't talk about her feelings. I don't think she would even use the word feelings. So I spent most of the day trying to figure her out, which seemed to annoy her more than anything, and not in a cute way. Why won't you tell me what's wrong? I asked her after class for what felt like the 100th time that day. Just drop it, okay? She hissed. Her lips were pursed, and after our last class was over, she bolted to the library without looking back. What's wrong with her? Dwight asked me. No idea. She wouldn't say. Is she? You know. He looked mortified for asking the question. Dude, how would I know that? He shrugged, but I wondered inwardly if he had a point. Still, I'm pretty sure you aren't supposed to mention a girl's period. Ever. It was one of those moments where you just know you should be doing something, but you're not sure what. Maya was clearly upset, but since she wouldn't tell me what was wrong, my options were limited. I sat at my desk for a minute, waiting for the class to clear out, when I had a thought. Rebecca was twirling like she always does when I think I have a good idea. She did cartwheels on the lawn in front of me. Spontaneity. Girls like that, right? I stopped at the grocery store and went straight to Maya's house, knowing she wouldn't be home for a couple hours. She was doing research at the library. I'd seen her through the window. She'd said her computer at home was too slow and usually monopolized by her little brothers. I'd been there a couple times to drop her off with my mom after academic team, but I'd never gone inside. The neighborhood was older, and some of the houses were pretty beat up. Dead grass, plastic flamingos, short chain-link fences around the front yard, that kind of thing. Her dad answered when I knocked, and one of her brothers drove a plastic trike into a wall somewhere behind him. Maya had said her dad was a plumber. When I saw his face, I knew that Maya must take after her mom. There was nothing in the goofy face and untucked shirt that could have belonged to Maya. I'd never officially met the guy before, and I hadn't considered that what I wanted to do would be weird coming from a stranger. He was maybe 5'6", so I sort of towered over him with my bag of groceries. But when I explained what I wanted to do, his face split into a wide grin. Maya had told him about me. Most people would have looked at me funny, but there was something in his expression that made me feel like he honestly didn't think I was doing anything weird. That made me feel good for some reason. So I walked into their small kitchen and got to work, while Rebecca sat at one of the bar stools with a dreamy expression on her face. 2 hours later, Maya walked through the front door with a defeated sounding, "I'm home." Her dad and brothers were already sitting down at the table, which was overflowing with some of my best work. Her hair had mostly fallen out of her ponytail, and her uniform looked like old skin she wanted to shed. I could tell she'd been crying. Then she asked what was going on. One of her brothers answered in a high-pitched shriek, "Adam made dinner!" They're both roughly the same size, and look like the same person, so I haven't gotten their names right yet. I mean, I know they're called David and Lucas, but I have not yet tried to assign the correct name to the correct kid. I walked over to her, took her backpack off her shoulders, and pulled out a chair at the table. She sat down and didn't say a word while her dad filled her in on how long I'd been in the kitchen, that I'd wanted to surprise her, etc., etc. He was excited as he told the story, but she just nodded like a zombie while her brothers took turns making a mess on the tablecloth. Some of the food got into their mouths, I think. It was my go-to meal, the one I make because it's simple and impressive. Classic lasagna, garlic knots with oil and vinegar, tomato and mozzarella salad, and fried zucchini. Then brownies with ice cream for dessert because I didn't have time for tiramisu. Which is a shame, because my tiramisu is a religious experience. Seriously. Her dad had a giant grin on his face during the whole meal. But Maya, I couldn't read. I made a plate for Maya's mom and covered it in tin foil before saying goodnight to everyone. Maya's dad shook my hand, gave me a bear hug, and told me to come back any time. Her brothers both hugged me around the knees before shouting something incomprehensible and racing down the hall to avoid a bath that, by the smell of them, they clearly needed. Maya still hadn't said anything. I figured my plan had been a complete disaster. I told her I'd see her at school and started walking home. Just as I was about to turn the corner, she came running up behind me. "Why did you do that?" she asked. "Do what? Make dinner?" "Yes. Why did you make dinner?" I shrugged. "Because all I can do is listen and feed you, and you weren't talking, so I made dinner." "But why?" Her voice sort of cracked. "Because you said it was mostly scrambled eggs or whatever you felt like making when you got home. I thought it would be nice." "You thought it would be nice, or you felt sorry for me?" I flinched at the forced toughness in her voice. "What? No, I don't feel sorry for you." What the hell was wrong with her? "Really? Is that why you came to our house in our ghetto neighborhood to bring food to poor people?" I'd never seen Maya like this before. Her hair had completely fallen out of its ponytail, and her eyes were searching my face for an explanation I couldn't give. I had no idea what to say. "That isn't why I came," I whispered. "Then why would you come to our house and make dinner?" she asked again. "Because I thought it would make you happy, and I like making you happy," I shouted. I think we were both a little surprised by how loud my voice was. I don't shout if I can help it, and I actually can't remember the last time I raised my voice to make a point. I'm tall, and I've always understood that the height coupled with yelling is fairly intimidating to regular-sized people. She stared at me for a few seconds. That was when she kissed me full on the mouth, which turned out to be quite a feat because of the height difference. She pulled my face to hers and kissed me like she was trying to breathe and I was hogging all the air. I wrapped my arms around her and lifted her up onto her toes. A full minute might have passed like this before she pulled away and said, "It did make me happy." She didn't look serious. In fact, in that moment, she looked more un-Maya-ish than I'd ever seen her. Then she turned and ran back toward her house so I wouldn't notice that she was crying. When I walked home, I heard a train whistle, and even though I knew no trains were running and it wasn't real, I smiled. I like trains. Remember when I said that in stories, trains mean either adventure or death? Maybe it's more than that. They might also mean choice. Every time the train's whistle blows, it's like a call to do something. I just don't know what. My mom was worried and angry when I got home because I'd forgotten to tell her where I was going or that I was going to be late. Well, she's probably always secretly hoped for regular kid problems. Came in after curfew. Check. I texted Maya while I was getting ready for bed. "Are you ever going to tell me what you were upset about today?" A few minutes passed before she responded. Maya.
Ian.
Me. What about him? Maya. His family pays for my scholarship at St. Agatha's. Me. Okay. Maya. They do a yearly audit of my school records to make sure my grades are good. But today Ian was there at the meeting for the first time ever. It's usually just the family's financial planner who checks all the requirements off a list, but Ian pulled my records out himself and went through everything out loud. Personal stuff, mom's salary, dad's salary, financial hardship eligibility. I was so mad I was crying. Me. Is there anything I can do? I wanted to hurt him. Maya.
I'll just trust karma. Besides, I'm not so angry about it right now.
See? Food fixes everything. Well, good food anyway. Chapter 14.
Dosage 2 milligrams. Same dosage.
November 14, 2012. I've told my mom that I don't need therapy, but she doesn't believe me. All my doctors still recommend it. They insist that this is the only outlet I have for the side effects of the drug. The other doctors like to test my memory. But, as I've told you, my memory is excellent. I can recite most major speeches if I like the way they sound. It's the other shit that's messy. Luckily, we seem to have hit the sweet spot for this drug, because I can almost will my delusions to leave. Yesterday, while I was talking to Maya, I watched the mobsters step out of the shadows on the blacktop and raise their guns. Just as they were about to open fire, I felt something strange snap into place in my head. It was the greatest sense of control I've ever had. I was able to stare down the mob boss until he didn't seem real anymore. He blinked. The mobsters and their weapons sank into the asphalt and disappeared. I did that. I made them leave for the first time in my life. Anyway, you asked about my academic team meets. They usually take place on the stage in the auditorium. Dwight says Ian's family shelled out a ton of money about 10 years ago to rebuild it. Now other Catholic high schools travel to us because our facilities are better. In fact, it's so fancy that politicians want to use it for debates. It's weird to describe an event where you know that everyone else is smarter than you. There are really only three options: get intimidated, get competitive, or watch.
For most of the match, I watched from the second string bench while Maya dominated the science questions and Dwight answered everything else. I don't notice this much during school anymore. Maybe it was the lighting on the stage or something. But he's really pale. So pale you can almost see his brain through his forehead. In the audience, I saw his mom, who looked a little older than the other parents. I'd heard her talk to Dwight before our practices. She's definitely the overprotective type. You can just tell by the way she watches him compete on stage. I looked back to the stage when she started to wave at the team, and Dwight waved awkwardly back, clearly embarrassed. Maya was sitting next to him, and she smiled at me. It was a very different smile now. I tried not to feel too cocky about that, but it was a sort of powerful feeling knowing that I could make her smile. Every time it lit up her face, she looked more beautiful than ever. The next thought that consumed me was that she was mine. We kissed. We had the boyfriend-girlfriend label conversation. Everything is now legit. Maya never actually demanded a label. She never insisted on having the talk about our relationship. But we ended up having it anyway because of Dwight. We were eating lunch, and out of nowhere he asked the question. So are you guys like a couple now? And before I could swallow my food and think of something clever to say in response to this, Maya said yes, without giggling like an idiot or adding anything else to the conversation. Dwight smiled at us, then went back to eating his organic vegan lunch, with the school paper propped up against his water bottle. We are? I asked. Unless you don't want to be, she said. No, I do, I said a little too enthusiastically. Good, she said. Yeah, good. And that was how the pathetic conversation happened. Claire and Rosa both giggled but didn't say anything. Our new status had been declared like a proclamation, the kind that signals high school intimacy in a way that nothing else can. I should probably add here that Maya and I haven't done anything yet. And I'm telling you because it feels like the kind of thing that might make me seem like a regular guy. Because it isn't that I don't want to do anything, but she isn't ready. And that's fine, because I'm not the kind of guy who pushes to do things with a girl. The kind of things we all think about in the shower. But yes, I think about sex. A lot. It's just more than that. There's this feeling that I have to be near her because she makes me less afraid, less angry, less paranoid that someone is going to find out about me and sound the alarm to remove the crazy guy. In a lot of ways, she's the thing that keeps me sane. More than the drug or the therapy, she's the cure. That was all I could think about while I doodled on my scratch paper and listened as my team answered questions. Then something weird happened. Dwight got a massive nosebleed and had to be escorted off the stage. I guess it wasn't actually weird, because he's gotten them at practice before, but this time it spurted out of his nostrils like a geyser. Torrents of blood gushed down his face and onto his ridiculous short-sleeved collared shirt that made him look like a traveling Mormon. As if she had been waiting for something like this to happen, his mother raced up the stairs and onto the stage, pulled a heavy-duty plastic container of Kleenex out of her bag, and stuffed a tissue into his nostrils. Poor Dwight. Once he was carted off, Sister Helen grabbed me by the collar and practically threw me into Dwight's empty chair so the competition could continue. Maya smiled her usual serious smile, because she was on stage, and then she squeezed my thigh. Her hand lingered there for a moment, then moved back onto the table. I don't remember breathing after that. I'm sure I did. I just don't remember doing it. For the next few moments, I wasn't really on stage with the rest of my team. I was in my head, somewhere alone with Maya.
Adam, pay attention! Sister Helen hissed at me.
No one had seen Maya touch me. She barely hid her smile behind her hair as she bent forward to work out a problem. No one suspects her of anything devious. Probably because she looks innocent. It's incredibly misleading. Then a strange haze fell over me. I knew something was off because after the moderator called for silence, I could still hear voices. They were soft at first, and then they got louder. They were giving me answers. Capital of Burkina Faso?
Ouagadougou, they said.
What character in Shakespeare's Othello?
Iago, they shouted.
I was on a roll. I was buzzing in faster than anyone else. Dwight watched from the audience with a dazed expression on his face while his mom tried to soak up the blood. Maya's eyes were wide with shock. My mom and Paul were wearing similar expressions of fear mixed with what appeared to be pride. And I knew why. Every question I answered was golden, but I'd never been this quick on the buzzer at practice. I must have looked manic. The voices got louder until, quite suddenly, the buzzer signaling the end of the match sounded. We'd won by over 60 points. But the voices didn't stop. They kept growing louder until I couldn't hear my own voice and couldn't concentrate over the sound of my pale, nerdy, cheering teammates, who were all as shocked as I was that their lowest scorer at practice had just miraculously outgeeked them all. I knew how to pretend. I just nodded and smiled at everyone, even though I couldn't hear a word they were saying. Sister Helen looked pleased as well. She was eating a cookie as she chatted up Father Benjamin. Maya was obviously surprised, but she had a big grin on her face. Then I saw my mom and watched her face fall. Her eyes said it all. Be careful. Are you okay? The voices stopped, and I could think again. Maya and I went out for coffee afterward. I guess I would consider it our first official date. Actually, she had coffee. I had juice. I bake with coffee, but I don't drink it. I hate stuff that smells better than it tastes. Seems ass backward. Maya likes it, though. She says when she drinks it on the weekends, it's the only time her brothers leave her alone. For some reason, the "don't bother me until I'm done with my coffee" seems to work on them. Anyway, there was a moment of awkwardness. We sat down at a table at Starbucks, and I kissed her. Well, tried to. "Did you just kiss my eye?" she asked, squinting up at me. I'd leaned in a little too early, and as a result, I'd kissed her eyeball. "Yeah," I said, laughing nervously. "Girls aren't into that?" "No, that's totally hot," she said in a mock serious tone, rubbing her eye. "But I prefer this." She put her hand on the back of my neck and pulled me toward her, kissing me hard on the mouth. When I started to pull away, she bit my lower lip and then gently let go. "I prefer that too," I said, still smiling. The biting thing was amazing, but I was a little freaked out by how advanced that move was. I thought it might be a good idea for me to say something really clever or romantic. I tried to think of a cool way to tell her that coffee tasted better on her lips, but Maya pulled me in again before I could speak. My mom and Paul are disgustingly cute sometimes. They have a date night once a week. It was something my mom insisted on doing when Paul was made partner at his firm. She said she was feeling a little neglected when he started bringing more work home, and I think after my dad, Mom still has a hard time believing that Paul isn't going anywhere. But I don't. It's the way he looks at her. My dad never looked at her like that, at least that I can remember. With the eyes and the grin, she doesn't have anything to worry about. Paul loves her.
Every once in a while, he'll surprise her and take her somewhere really special. He's even gone so far as to buy her a new outfit, lay it out for her, and tell her exactly what time to be ready for their date. Apparently, he's asked stores to save her size and brand preferences so he can continue to do this in the future. Barf, but yeah. Okay. I get it. It's cute. Like that scene in Field of Dreams where we find out that Moonlight Graham bought all those blue hats for his wife. So many that when he died, they found boxes of them he never got a chance to give her. He's also got the flowers thing down. My mom once told him that she hated flowers. She couldn't understand why anyone would kill something so beautiful and give it as a gift only to watch it die slowly over the next few days. So Paul got creative. He bought paintings of flowers, had origami flowers made, bought her earrings in the shape of flowers. Once he even bought her cooking flour, which I used, and it made my mom laugh. Mom does little things for him, too. She'll leave notes in the pockets of his clothes and slip chocolate into his lunch. They're disgusting to the point that it is probably uncomfortable for people to be in their presence. But it can't be denied that they have something beautiful. It must be nice having someone to come home to every day. Someone to be gross with. My mom is the kind of person who makes you feel important. No matter how tiny your problem is, she listens like it's a major crisis, and she wants to make everything okay. So she's great. But she is also the kind of person who stores soy sauce packets in the utensil drawer and forgets whether she left the garage door open. Every day. And Paul is the kind of guy who doesn't mind secretly throwing the soy sauce packets out and calling our elderly neighbor across the street to check that the garage door is closed. I'm glad he's patient. I'm glad they have each other. But sometimes I think about how much happier everyone would be if I weren't around. That's when I feel sad and guilty, because if anything happened to me, my mom would be devastated. But as long as I'm in her life, she's always going to worry about whether or not I'm okay. I don't know which is worse. There are days I just wish I weren't me. But if I weren't me, Maya would be texting someone else every night before she goes to bed. Yesterday it was this. Maya. Hey, just thought I should tell you that I really like kissing you. Me. I like that you like kissing me too. Maya. Barf. Chapter 15.
Dosage 2 milligrams, same dosage.
November 21, 2012. It was somehow decided that Dwight and I would play tennis on Monday nights. I do not play tennis, nor have I ever expressed any desire to do so. This is what happened. During last week's academic team match, it only took a few minutes for my mom to make eye contact with Dwight's mom to see if Dwight was okay after his nosebleed. She walked over with Paul in tow and proceeded to rummage through her bag for wet wipes to help mop the blood off Dwight's face. My mom still keeps wet wipes in her purse. They usually dry out before she has the opportunity to use them, but on the rare occasion that she can bust one out and wipe something sticky off her hands, she'll turn to me and raise an eyebrow as if to say, "See? I told you they'd come in handy." Whatever transpired between the two moms in that moment, I will never know. By the time I got in the car, it had been decided that I would spend more time with Dwight. I tried explaining that that was basically impossible, since he was already in almost all my classes and on academic team, but my mom liked the idea of me hanging out with friends outside school. There was no dissuading her. Being set up on a playdate in high school is not beyond the realm of behavior for my mother, but I still pretended to be shocked and outraged. Even though Paul tried to intervene, my mom was resolute. I would play tennis with Dwight. So on Monday, Dwight and I met at a tennis court near my neighborhood. The first thing I noticed was that he looked skinnier in tennis clothes than he did in his uniform at school. "Have you ever played before?" he asked.
"Nope."
"Have you ever seen a tennis match before?"
"Nope."
He was unfazed. Dwight taught me how to hold a racket, and for 1 hour we hit balls back and forth to each other. He was actually really good, way more coordinated than I thought he'd be, which is probably pretty jerky on my part. When we were done, we sat on the edge of the tennis court for a while, drinking Gatorade. I noticed he was really quiet. He was weird.
"What's up?" I asked.
"Did you just come here because your mom told you to?" he asked. The question was awkward. I'd put it in the same category as, "Will you be my friend?" "No," I lied. "I've never played tennis before. It sounded like fun." His face split into this big, goofy grin.
"Same time next week?"
"Sure." He picked up his bag and walked off the court, leaving a heavy scent of his sunscreen in the air. SPF 500, I'm sure. And that was it. I don't know if we're just both so completely pathetic that our moms felt the need to set us up, or if Dwight and I were always meant to venture on this awkward journey of friendship together. But it's okay, I guess. It is not generally my prerogative to bum anyone out. I don't want them to feel like they have to carry my problems around as if they don't already have shit of their own festering inside them. It isn't fair. That's why I always say, "Fine," when my mom asks how I am, and why I always return Paul's awkward smile with an equally awkward smile of my own. I do not want to be someone's problem. I don't want to be the reason someone has to change their life. Today at school I thought about you. Not in a creepy way. I just wondered about the other people you've treated. The other schizos with their disjointed speech and soapy spit bubbles and tinfoil hats. The ones who aren't on Tozaprex and who no longer see the line between what is real and what is batshit crazy. About a year ago, when my mom first took me to see a doctor, I was in bad shape. It felt like my brain had been dumped onto a dirty sidewalk, then poured back into my head with bits of garbage and broken glass. It was surprising how quickly it happened. I was fine, and then I wasn't. The doctor's waiting room was like purgatory. Everybody knows they're already dead, but it's such a depressing afterlife, it's actually a little scary if you think about it too hard. Exactly like being stuck in line at the DMV for all eternity. The waiting room is a place I still have nightmares about. Except when I do, I'm chained to one of the chairs and trying to ward off the punches of another patient while my mom watches from behind a glass window because a man in a white coat is trying to explain that I'm too dangerous to approach. I'm screaming and crying, but no one hears me, or, worse, no one cares. It's the loneliest I've ever felt. Anyway, the waiting room only had two or three patients in it. All men. Unless you counted Rebecca, who was sitting quietly and playing at the Lego table. One of the men was my age and with his mom. He looked like he was in worse shape than me, which was comforting for some reason. Of course, that made me feel guilty. Why should the fact that he looked worse off make me feel better about myself? It doesn't matter. There's no escape for either of us. Even our moms know this is true, which is probably the worst thing about this situation. I'd rather suffer alone. So the other kid in the waiting room was rocking back and forth and humming to himself. It wasn't a song I recognized, and the tune seemed to change sporadically. His mom wasn't saying anything to him about it. She was reading something on her Kindle,
and acting like her son was just sitting there, not doing anything odd. It was like she knew her kid was being weird, but she would be more than happy to kick your ass if you brought it up. She had this Xena warrior princess attitude about her that made it perfectly clear that she had been fighting for her son his entire life. It was only when he started pulling at his sleeve that she snapped to attention and pulled the sleeve back. But not before I saw the deep red gashes in his forearms. They looked like he'd been digging for something up to the crook of his elbow. I was staring, and his mother noticed and glared back, daring me to say something, which kicked my mom's natural protective instincts into gear. They stared each other down for a moment before my mom asked, "Here to see Dr. Finkelman, too?" The other woman nodded, touched her son's head fondly, and eventually resumed her reading. They were no longer adversaries. Just two women fighting the same battle, putting their faith in the same doctor. Cure my son. I think about that waiting room more than any other spot because it's our gathering place. The place where the crazies go. A group of us. Seeing things no one else can see and following orders no one else can hear because we have no choice. Our truth is different from everyone else's. I guess I should count my blessings because I could have been born in pretty much any other decade in history and been sent to a madhouse where the patients were caged and baited like animals. Places so breathtakingly evil that you don't have to imagine hell. Asylums were nasty places. This entry is a bummer. But count your blessings. At least you get paid to read it. Chapter 16.
Dosage 2.5 milligrams. Approved increase in dosage.
November 28, 2012. I used to think that Dwight's ability to talk in almost every circumstance was annoying, but I've developed a respect for it. It is almost impossible to keep up a steady stream of conversation during a tennis match, but Dwight does it without getting winded or breaking a sweat. He would be perfectly content talking forever without ever actually saying anything. But the nice thing about him is he doesn't worry about how he looks to other people. He's awkward, pale, skinny. He's not the type to feel sorry for himself. And the weird thing is he's happy all the time, which is why it was so odd to hear the unhappiness in his voice after gym yesterday. We'd just finished our laps on the track, and most of the guys had already showered. St. Agatha's does not have a long wall of showers like some of those locker rooms you might see on TV. They have individual stalls with hooks on the outside of the door for your clothes. Very classy. And phenomenally stupid for high school showers. I'd been one of the last ones to finish the run. So when I walked into the locker room, all I could hear was Dwight pleading with Ian and four other guys to give him back his clothes. "Come on, guys," Dwight said through the door. Ian was wearing his towel around his waist and holding Dwight's clothes away from his body like a matador coaxing a bull into the arena. "Seriously, guys, I'm going to be late for class," Dwight pleaded.
"Not really my problem," said Ian.
He walked to the row of lockers right by the door to the main hallway and tossed Dwight's clothes high out of reach.
"Looks like you don't have any options."
Being tall and menacing has its advantages. I don't think anyone saw me enter the room, so when I parted the crowd around Ian, there was silence. He was about to open his mouth to speak when I yanked off his towel and shoved him out the locker room door and into the hallway, holding the door tight so he couldn't get back in. He pounded on it from the other side, and, curiously, none of the other guys in the locker room did anything to stop me. In fact, they scattered when I looked back at them. Then the bell rang. The sound of hundreds of footsteps echoed in the hallway, followed by laughter. I grabbed Dwight's clothes from the top of the locker and handed them to him over his stall.
You just pushed him into the hall stark naked, he said.
Yep,
I said. Dwight's face split into a grin.
How did he look?
Cold, I said.
Come on, we're going to be late.
It was probably immature and incredibly stupid, but some of the best moments are. I'd probably pay for it later. Still, no regrets. Maya's text later. Maya.
I saw Ian Stone's white pimply ass today running past the gym. I almost went blind. I'm told you had something to do with that?
Me. You're welcome. Love, Karma. Chapter 17.
Dosage 2.5 milligrams, same dosage.
December 5, 2012. My mom is pregnant. Chapter 18.
Dosage 3 milligrams, approved increase in dosage.
January 9, 2013. Let's just blow past the last thing I wrote for a minute, and while we're at it, I see no reason to devote any time to my family vacation. We went to Hawaii, or my Christmas gifts. They got me the deep fryer I wanted. I got Maya a life vest and swimming lessons. She handwrote all of her grandmother's Filipino recipes and gave them to me in a leather-bound book. Yes, of course I missed her while I was gone. But none of that matters. Because while I was gone, 20 kids and 6 adults were murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. Around the world, this happens fairly regularly. People drop like flies by the thousands, and usually no one cares. No one here cares, anyway. Before you make that face, take a minute to acknowledge that I am right. Because, honestly, who cares about a bunch of dead people you don't know? Nobody. Unless they're kids. Then we care. Because that sucks. Mom and Paul didn't tell me about the secret meeting they'd had with the school after it happened. I wouldn't have even known about it if I hadn't been looking at my mom's phone. In this case, the school knew someone they could be afraid of. They knew someone they could blame if the danger were present. The head of the school board, Ian's dad, planned the meeting quickly after the shooting, because he needed to make sure no one else had to be notified, for legal reasons. And it was hard to do with Christmas only a few days away. Other parents wouldn't want their kids going to school with someone like me, someone with the potential to lose control. Most people wouldn't even bother to research my condition or ask about my medication. They'd go straight to panic. I can't say I blame them. Even though it happened on the other side of the country, I immediately knew what it would mean for me. He was one of us. And an honor student. He even went to Catholic school for a little while. Eerily enough, we even have the same first name. Adam. Even if all those things weren't true, there was no way the school would not want to talk with my mom and Paul. I knew they'd want to have a board meeting, perhaps a public inquisition to keep things Catholic. They objected to the secrecy. They wanted someone to protest the fact that Paul had made it abundantly clear that no one at school was to know about my condition. Because then if an incident occurred, there would undoubtedly be the parent who screamed bloody murder because they had not been told that their child was attending school with a ticking time bomb. Me. This conflicts with the church's actual teachings, though, which is highly inconvenient for them. The Bible teaches tolerance. I doubt that Jesus would have encouraged people to out me as a schizo. Does "let him who is without sin be the first to cast a stone" ring any bells for anyone? They don't know much about the shooter yet. He could have planned the whole thing for months, gotten other people involved,
notified the police ahead of time to bargain for something he wanted. But none of that seemed to be the case. They're just speculating on the why. Which to me doesn't actually mean shit. The facts are that a 20-year-old man shot his mother and then walked into an elementary school and opened fire on children and teachers. Just destroyed them for no reason. As if they were in the way of something. The discussion about guns is happening again, but nobody seems too concerned about changing any laws. Nothing changes the fact that those kids are dead. Forever. My mom is a pretty sensible person, and might have been crying a little bit about the gruesome deaths. But mostly she was crying about me. She watched the coverage on the news, and I just knew. Because this guy had mental problems, and who knows what kind of demons whispering in his ear. She was afraid for me. There might be a witch hunt of every person with a mental illness. It would be easy to make the homeless schizophrenic community disappear. No one would notice they were gone. And then the people who talk to themselves, the poor bastards who are bipolar, everyone with severe behavioral problems. That is Mom's nightmare. That someday someone will come for me and she won't be able to stop them. When I got back to school after Christmas break, we all talked about it. The first mass was dedicated to the victims and their families. A little, terrified-looking second grader who could barely see over the lectern read the prayers of the faithful. She spoke in a tiny voice and said, "For the victims of the Sandy Hook shooting and their families, Lord, hear our prayer." When she was done speaking, there was this terrible emptiness. She was probably the same age as the kids who died, and I felt this overwhelming sadness that must have shown on my face, because Maya touched my hand. Of course, we had to talk about it when we got back to class. We'd have to openly discuss every detail of the event so we'd know what to do if anything like that happened here. There's no way the nuns would let us escape a long, drawn-out safety discussion accompanied by a prayer for the victims, because why not? We pray for every other stupid thing. I can't imagine why praying for the dead would be any less ridiculous. It was maybe half a second after the prayer that the class started talking about the shooter. "What was wrong with him?" someone asked. "They're not sure. Mental problems, they think." Sister Catherine's eyes did the tiniest of double takes in my direction as she said it. But she turned away quickly. Rebecca was sitting on Sister Catherine's desk at the front of the room, looking furious. If she'd been real, she would have thrown something at her. Then again, if she'd been real, I wouldn't be crazy. That was when I heard it. "Why didn't the fucker just kill himself if he was so miserable?" I didn't see who'd said it, but I heard it. It was in a stage whisper, but Sister Catherine's head snapped up as she hissed, "Who said that?" in a deadly voice. Her mouth stretched into a thin line as she glared out at the class. No one moved. No one said a word. The phrase just hung in the air above us. Why didn't the fucker just kill himself? And for a second, I was angry because whoever had said it has no idea what it's like to lose control. They don't know what it's like to be haunted by your own mind. They don't understand the mad desire to make the voices stop, even if it means doing what they tell you to. But I had to stop myself, because I realized my reaction was in sympathy of the killer, and I didn't want it to be. When the bell rang, Sister Catherine caught my attention and waved me over to her desk as quietly as possible. She waited until the class had cleared out before she spoke. "They didn't mean you, Adam," she said quickly. Most of the time I can forget that the teachers know my secret, so it was odd having this discussion. "They did," I said, They just don't know they meant me.
She shook her head.
There is no justification for anyone to take their own life. That power belongs to God alone.
Then maybe he should have taken that guy out before he killed those kids, I said.
Sister Catherine looked like she was looking for the right words, but I didn't want her to feel like she needed to comfort me.
It's okay, sister. I'll see you tomorrow.
In this situation, whoever had said that in class was right. He could have just offed himself. No one else would have had to die.
I don't think I'll ever forget that feeling, when I learned what someone would say if they knew my secret.
What they really thought about people with my condition. Not the fake, comforting words they'd give that other people would hear. The real words in their heart. If they knew I was a threat, they'd tell me to kill myself. They'd think I was a monster. On Monday, I'd received a friendly reminder notice from the office to check in with my student ambassador. Naturally, I tossed it in the trash. Nobody was actually monitoring my participation in the student ambassador program, but I was supposed to be having weekly meetings with Ian. I guess the prospect of these meetings disappeared when I shoved his naked ass into a crowded hallway. It's a shame, because I think we were really starting to hit it off. The weird thing was he'd been unusually quiet since then. I didn't worry about it until today, when I passed him in the hall after class. Instead of walking past me like I didn't exist, he stopped and looked at me with a weird expression on his face, like he knew something I didn't. When I walked to the bathroom in the hallway next to the church, he followed me in and took the urinal next to me and started to take a leak. I usually avoid conversation with other guys while I have my dick in my hand, but Ian was unfazed. It was the first time I'd been this close to him since the shower incident.
"Tragic what happened in Connecticut," he said.
"Yeah," I said, watching his lip curl and waiting for him to get to the point.
"People with problems like that. We should just round them up and shoot them, you know? That way nobody gets hurt."
He zipped up his pants and clapped me on the back, but not before turning to the "Jesus loves you, don't be a homo" graffiti on the wall and saying,
"That's been there forever. Someone should really clean it up."
I felt my body go cold. Sometimes I forget you're there. I write these notes and spill my guts, and sometimes it feels like you really hear me. Other times it feels like I'm just writing to nobody. So I'd like to take this opportunity to say that I don't like guns. I don't own guns, and I don't have any desire to shoot anyone ever. I don't play violent video games, mostly because I'm bad at them. I don't even really like laser tag.
Amen.
Chapter 19.
Dosage 3 milligrams, same dosage.
January 16, 2013. Yes, I understand that you want to know how I hurt my hand. And I get that this isn't how therapy works. I'm not getting the full benefits of the session by talking to you through these diary entries, because therapy is a conversation, not a dissertation. You listen to me, we talk about what I've said, and then we make a plan to do it all over again the following week, and nobody ever gets fixed. The thing is that I know what's going on. I don't need you to tell me what's wrong with me. I don't need the back-and-forth analysis of what my dreams are telling me or how my hallucinations are changing. I'm very aware of the things lurking in my head. I understand that I'm not normal, so I actually don't need you, which is why I don't need to talk in your office. I don't ask you about the picture frames on your desk of your three children, who will almost definitely need braces. Sorry, dude, but it's true. I don't ask you about your wife or about the painting behind your desk of the woman with the green umbrella.
It might actually be worse for you because I write everything down.
It means the evidence is all here. If you miss my decision...